welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm good. It is snowing like a, well, I may as well just say a motherfucker, because if you're new here, welcome, we swear. It is the biggest blizzard I've seen in quite some time, maybe ever. So
wow. It's just cold and like below freezing, but no snow here. So everything is an ice rink, which is very nice. But it's just like gray and frozen over and not snowy. So I'm jealous.
Yeah, well, I hope it stops in time, because tomorrow at this time, I will be taking off ideally to go to Europe to see you and watch the Olympics together.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I got my nails done and I asked the woman to do like some abstract like Olympic circle inspired nail art. And she was like, oh, are you excited for the Olympics? And I wasn't sure how to explain to her what we do, so I was like, I am a sports journalist.
That's not inaccurate.
I mean, it's sort of accurate. It's not 100% true, but we are some sort of experts, which is why the people are here for this.
Yeah, and if you, like us, are very excited about the Olympics, but maybe you're not quite sure where to begin or, like, how to absorb it in the best way, this is part two of our series on, like, figure skating for noobs. Welcome.
Welcome. My first suggestion is go get your nails done and lie to a nail artist that you know what's happening. And we're going to help you. We're going to help you sound like a sports journalist for your nail technician.
We are. So part two, I have titled in my outline document, how the fuck does judging work? And this is a question that we ask ourselves pretty much daily. The running theme of this episode is going to be like, we explain to you how it's supposed to work, and then we kind of explain to you how it actually plays out in real life, because it's a subjectively judged sport, and that means there's lots of room for, you know, what the fuck are you doing judges. That's a lot of the sport, but I just want to make a disclaimer that while it does sometimes get frustrating, I don't want anybody to listen to this and then be like, well, why should I even watch this sport? It sucks. It's not fair.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, there's many reasons why judging is kind of broken. One of them is it's humans making observations and grading what they're seeing allegedly objectively, and that doesn't always work. There is also, of course, corruption, as is the case with a lot of sports. There's also just the thing of, like we talked about in part one, it's an aesthetic sport, and sometimes, whether we like it or not, judges will not like something that you maybe liked. And a part of it is the aesthetics of it. So that's also a thing. Maybe they're not all, you know, making big money because someone's buying scores. Maybe sometimes the numbers just work out a certain way. Anyway, we're going to try to explain how and why.
We are. First of all, if you were watching figure skating like years and years ago and you're just coming back now, you may be asking yourself, where's 6.0? What happened to 6.0? Where did she go?
She can't come to the phone right now because she's dead.
She's dead. She's gone. Welcome to her replacement, the IJS, the International Judging System. So the original idea behind changing from 6.0 to the IJS, and I should say the IJS has been tweaked and changed a bit since its introduction. It's not just been one thing. They do change it a little bit every year or so. But in general, the format is the same. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was changed was because it made everything extremely mathy and extremely, our favorite word, granular. Exactly. In an effort to make it less subjective, meaning rather than saying, can you please quantify this entire four and a half, as it used to be, minutes of skating into like the number six, it's now like, here's 100 million numbers that you have to like rate everything on, and then we're going to do calculus to make them into one number. And does it work? No. For all the reasons we just said, it's a subjective sport, and the more little tiny corners and pockets of like score, sections of another score that you have, the more places there are for you to tuck away extra points that you want to give someone for no reason.
Yeah, basically. I mean, the idea behind it is, my personal opinion, good.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the IJS, in theory, is smarter because there are different aspects of a program that should be judged differently.
So I agree with you that if it was followed to the letter, it would work. And so it's hard to reform because there's actually nothing wrong with it on paper. It's just how it's actually like used or rather not used. But we'll tell you how it's supposed to work.
Yes, tell me.
When you see the score come up at the end of a program, it's actually two scores added together. Half of it is the technical score and half of it is the artistic score because, as we said in our previous little primer episode, skating is a sport and an art. And if you need proof of that, that's literally how it's judged. It's like one of the scores is the sport and one of the scores is the art.
Yeah.
Then you add those together. Okay, so the technical score is called the TES, technical element score. As you'll remember, an element is anything that the skater does on ice that's being judged. So TES is the tech score. The PCS is the artistic score. That stands for program component score. The components are a bunch of little categories that all fall under the umbrella of artistry. And those component scores are like kind of your artistry scores. So TES, PCS. The total score, when they are added together, the score is the TSS, total segment score, but it's just the score. So the reason that this would work in theory is because it's designed so that a skater who can jump really, really, really well, but has like no beauty to their skating and like really empty choreography, they would get a high tech score and a low PCS. And a skater who was sort of the opposite, who had easier jumps and couldn't really do the really hard jumps, but was gorgeous technique-wise and artistry-wise, they would get a lower tech score and a higher PCS. And that would theoretically balance out different types of skaters. Netta, will you explain to me what actually happens in real life?
God, what happens in real life is that in the current school of figure skating, in the current era, everything is so much about how physically impossible can we make this sport that essentially people who have big jumps end up getting very high PCS regardless of how artistic and pretty their program was, because it's kind of accepted that PCS is just kind of bonus points for your very good technical sport, technical like sporting that you're doing. And people will argue that one of the PCS subcategories is skating skills. So a lot of people are like, well, they have to have good skating skills to be able to jump real good because that's a skill. That's a lie though, because what skating skills does mean is the quality of your skating. You could have amazing skating skills and never do a single jump. But that's not what happens. Conversely, the opposite is also true, that there is a lot of skaters out there who are incredible artists, who will make you feel the emotion of their performance, who will, you know, skate beautifully, and then they get very low PCS because they didn't have the big jumps. So it's kind of like, in order for your PCS to be very high, you have to first like get the judges on your side with a good technical score, which is not how the system should be. This is not what is on paper.
Yeah, it's also documented, I want to say maybe in Adam Rippon's memoir, it's in some skater's memoir about how the judges like pretty openly will admit to refusing to give high PCS to skaters that are new on the circuit because they have to like earn it. Yeah. Basically, and then there's, you know, it's exactly right. They scale them together for no reason. Skating skills, as you said, is like, it's two words that mean things and you put them together and in out of context, sure, it means like, how good are you at skating? But like capital S, skating skills in the context of judging means like deep edges, muscle support, like it's very specific.
It's figures. It's because we no longer judge figures. It's your figures.
There you go. So
this was short and sweet. I can't do this anymore because my brain is broken. Let's talk about what actually goes into your test.
I was going to say, yeah, like it's short and sweet. Let's dive in a little deeper. So now that we've established that we have your tech score and your artistry score, or your TES and your PCS, we're going to go a little deeper into each one and talk about how they are calculated or like supposed to be calculated.
Do you say TES? I always say Tess. Like she's a good friend of mine who works at like a drugstore.
Or like Tesco. I always say TES.
she's my friend Tess. like my Tess from Burlesque.
I had a friend Tess growing up, and she was really pleasant in a way that she was really pleasant in a way that the scoring system is unpleasant to describe. But anyway, okay, so here is how the TES works. We're putting this in like the most simple way possible because you can get super, super, super mathematical with this. And if that's your jam, that's awesome. And I would recommend like reading stuff about it. If you just want like the world's most simple explanation, this is for you. So
go for it.
Every element has a base value, or a BV, not to be confused with bacterial vaginosis.
God. Yeah. So you have your BV, which is basically how hard is this thing you're doing on a scale from 0.5 to like 15-ish.
15-ish, yeah. You might see something higher than 15, but that's roughly the range. And it's like, so here we already have this thing of like people sat down in a room and said a toe loop is easy and a Lutz is hard. And like that actually maybe that's true in like a very, very broad sense. But like to individual skaters, is that true? Not always. So that's like we just sort of accept it as fact, but whatever. So I go into a jump has a base value based on how hard it is in theory. Okay, then I do the jump and I get a GOE, which stands for grade of execution. And that is how well I actually did it. And that is on a scale. It can be positive or negative. So if I really fucked it up, you can have a negative and that takes off points from the base value. Or you can do really well and get positive and that adds points to the base value. It's kind of a lot like the artistry in that there are specific criteria and like a rubric they're supposed to follow for like what makes a jump good. And in reality, it's kind of more of a vibe check. And like, I get it. It's very, very quick and fast. And yes, they have video replay, but like, I don't know. It's a quick judgment call you have to make a whole bunch of times throughout a program. But still, that's kind of subjective. So you might see somebody get a really, really, really good grade of execution on a really difficult jump. And it's like, did they technically do a good job? No, the judge is just impressed that they did it at all.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that doesn't really work in practice, but in theory, the idea is everything you're attempting costs a certain number of points, and then if you do it super, super cool, like, it's the same physical thing. It's not a harder thing or an easier thing. If you do this thing that you set out to do, either just kind of shitty or very fucking good, you get bonuses, which is your GOE. Oh, I remember what I wanted to add just real quick. This, you already know this. If you're here, you already know this. Because if you've seen any competitive figure skating ever in your life, you know the little box that's in the corner? And sometimes after a thing, it goes green or it goes red? That's the GOE. You've seen the GOE either be a plus or a minus.
Yep. And if it's yellow, it's like they're not actually sure. It's too close to call, or they have to review the footage to see whether this edge was at the right angle or some shit. I don't know if there's going to be a color score box at the Olympics because it depends on who's broadcasting it, but you might see one. It's really helpful.
I think American Broadcasting is the only one that does the little squares, you know, the traffic light squares. And yeah. I am always delighted when I get those because I think they're just like, first of all, they're the most legible for me personally, and also I like that it's like a progress bar and you can see how far into it you are. In Europe, we mostly just get the like current whatever element and we don't see the progression, and I miss that.
Yeah, I think the last thing I want to say about GOE is that the reason we're not getting too specific into numbers or like what's the most or least you can get is because it depends on the element. So it's better to just know that GOE is quality of thing and yeah. Base value is difficulty.
Yes. That's as much as you need to know.
But like, as we're on the topic of the score box, let's say that you're watching and the score box says step sequence or STSQ 4, like the number 4. And it's like, wait a minute, did I miss the first three? And that took me a while to figure out. No, you didn't. As we discussed previously, there's only one. Do you want to explain sort of what the 4 is for?
The 4 is the difficulty of how hard your step sequence or your choreo sequence was.
Or spins. Spins get levels too.
Spins.
They're called levels. Yeah.
Spins also get levels, yes. So it's basically going into it how hard it's promised to be.
Yeah, it's the same thing as base value. It's just that like with jumps, they're pretty easy to delineate based on like triple, quad, whatever. With spins and step sequences and choreo sequences, it's like you have to have this additional rubric to designate like levels of difficulty because it's less clearly delineated. And so the number you see is the level. And like the thing we said with GOE, different elements have different maximum levels. So like you might see choreo sequence one and be like, why the fuck is that a level one? That was beautiful. Well, in choreo sequence, there's only one level. So it's just...
it's either a zero or a one. And the one is... yes.
It's, again, it's not worth getting too hung up on like what the numbers are. Just that's what that is. It's a difficulty level indicator.
Yeah. If you want to impress someone in your life, if it happens, it's in elite skating, it's very, honestly, they're kind of all expected to do the high levels. So sometimes you'd be like, his spin only got a level three. And that's like a big deal for, like, if a skater who's expected to be very, very, very good has like a little bit of a wobbly, like something in their spin, it could be like, oh my God, it was only a level three. And that's like a huge deal. So it's one of those things that you can say and people think that you know what you're doing.
Yeah. And it typically doesn't come up, to be honest, but like it might if a skater to your eye looks like they did perfectly and then they get a weirdly low score. Occasionally it's that it's like, oh, they spun one too few times, so they didn't get this level on this spin. And it's like,
yeah. What else is important about the Tess, my good friend Tess?
Oh, do you want to talk to me about backloading?
No, I don't. But we have to. So skating a figure skating program is very exhausting for the person who is skating it. And that's true for the most elite, amazing, trained, highly trained athletes out there. So there is a way that the scoring system rewards their stamina, which is that if you do jumps in the second half of your program, they get a 10% bonus. It's like on top of your like already promised points, you get bonus points for doing it when your leggies are tired, which is nice, but you can't do all of them anymore because people used to just backload. That's what backloading is. People would like just skate around for the first half of their program and then hit the 2 minute mark and start doing the jumps because it's promised bonus points. And after the 2018 Olympics, when that was partially why the Olympic gold medalist who ended up winning the women's field, Alina Zagitova, won, people are like, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't give people this loophole which allows them to just promise themselves some bonus points for no reason. So now it's, you have to not backload everything, but you still get rewarded for it. And sometimes people will do like a risky thing of like saving a harder quote unquote jump for the second half. And then that's like very high risk, very high reward.
There you go.
I talked about it and I didn't swear once.
That's amazing.
Are you proud of me?
I'm wicked proud of you. Yeah. Stamina wise. Yeah. You nailed it. That's it. That's it. So that's TES. That's the technical scoring. There's more to it, but we won't talk about it because you don't really need to know it unless you're really into math.
This is honestly how much you need to know.
So PCS, which program component score, artistry score, basically it's like in the same way that the technical score is super duper mathy, the PCS is kind of loosey-goosey in a way. But the rubric is essentially...
it's meant to judge the cohesiveness and artistry of your program. There is five components, and they are skating skills, transitions, performance, composition, and interpretation of music. There is a bunch of math that goes into, they don't have a grade of execution, but they have a factor, which is like how important each one of them is, which we can't get into because first of all, it's impossible to explain, and secondly, it doesn't get used. But basically, this is the, in theory, easy math.
Because it's a lot of 10.
Yeah, yeah, it's tens across the board.
One thing I will say in regards to factoring is that in addition to all of what Netta just said, men's PCS counts more than women's. Like it gets multiplied by a slightly larger number when they factor it in. And originally this was intended to account for the fact that at one point in time, men were doing more technically difficult stuff than women. And so if men were having a bigger TES overall, they should also have a bigger PCS and like the inverse for women. But now women are doing basically everything shit men do. And so it kind of is now like a little broken in that way as well. And that's that. But can I? Okay, here's one thing, yes, that I wanted to sort of bring up about that I actually really don't know how you could possibly ever fix with PCS.
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay. There's always, you're always judging a skater individually, right? Mm-hmm. There's no element, there's no element coded into the judging system that factors in comparison. And yet, whenever you're judging anything, if you saw a skate that you think is the best thing in your entire life and you want to give it all 10s, but you know there's like six more people to go and they're all usually better than this person, like, what do you do? So I think
that... You give everyone 10s across the board.
Well, yeah, theoretically, but sometimes you see, you can very clearly see judges like saving better scores for other people. And yeah, it's just this, it's a mess. It's, you know, but that's, I don't really, unless we can train robots to judge figure skating in a very technical way, I'm not
sure.
But
we've talked about it though, even if we train robots, it's still going to be programmed by someone. So somewhere down the line, there is a human. So the problem is that humanity exists.
Yeah, that's true. We should probably just teach apes to skate.
Oh, that would be so cute.
It would be so cute, right?
Oh my God. I'm distracted now because I'm imagining, I'm thinking of like the IKEA monkey, but it's apes and they're wearing little costumes and they're skating. I can't do this. Let's talk about judges.
Let's do it.
So just like, real quick.
So here are some questions that people might have about judges. Do judges have to have ever skated in their lives? No.
No. You can go to school for figure skating. It's a major that you can have. And you can just learn everything about it. And
yeah,
just know it from a technical perspective and do it.
So that's a thing. When it comes to, like, why are they being shady? We don't know. And, like, you would think we would, right? You would think if there was some kind of massive, like, bribery scandal or some sort of, like, blackmailing, like, you think we would know. But we don't know anything. And it doesn't mean it not happening. It doesn't mean it is happening. You know, you'll look at numbers and be like, wow, I don't know why this coach's skaters always get 50 points more than another skater's. Surely that's, you know, something going on there. But, like, it's not, like, an open secret. It's, like, a very secret secret. We have no idea.
Yeah. Also, sometimes it's very... Well, I don't know if it's funny, but to me, it's funny. If you open a protocol, you can... Because the way protocols look, and you don't need to know this, is you see
a little...
Oh, do
you want to explain what a protocol is?
The protocol is basically the score sheet. It's the rubric that they release after the event, and you can just go in and, like, look at all the math that actually went into creating the scores, and you can get very bogged down and very mad about things. But it's sometimes really funny because it goes down in little columns. So you can see, like, everything that Judge 1 did and everything that Judge 2 did. And sometimes a judge is just having a bad day. Everyone else is like, yeah, girl, we're going to give this, like, plus 4 GOE. And we're going to give them, like, 9.25 skating skills. And Judge 4 or someone is like, skating skills is a 6. And the GOE is minus 5. So sometimes people are just mean on an individual level.
It's true. Or just more or less strict. If you really want to, like, check out really awesome graphic representations of that, our friends at Skating Scores, which is a Twitter account, which I think is just at Skating Scores.
It is.
They're absolutely great. And
they know more about this than we do.
That's their whole bread and butter, is they aggregate every single number that goes into any competition, and then they make cool graphs about it. So you can see, like, this is the way that, like, the Japanese judge would have ranked the skaters, and this is the way that the American judge would have ranked the skaters, and this is, like, the range of scores this person got. It's so fascinating, and so I would definitely recommend Skating Scores. You should.
You just said something that I think is important to mention. The judging panels and technical specialists and all of that, they're always from different countries. It's never, unless you're at like the nationals event for a certain country, it's an international panel of judges, which also kind of reflects how they score different things because it's different schools. It's places that have different viewpoints on what is important and what it isn't and what is good and what isn't. So that's also interesting as a perspective on why two judges who are professionals and that's their job can look at the same thing and give it different scores.
There you have it. So we've now spent all this time explaining to you how skating is judged. However, that is true in like an individual sense. The Olympics also has a team event.
Megan, please explain to me what a team event is, because I'm the Griffin McElroy meme of like, I do not know what a team event is. And at this point, I'm afraid to ask.
Okay, so I did my research on this because I kind of didn't either. And the reason we don't know is because it doesn't happen. Like, it was, like, invented for the Olympics. There's one other time that this ever happens in major international competition, and it's every 2 years. They have World Team Trophy, or as we call it, the Goofy Olympics.
And it's I miss the Goofy Olympics.
I miss them, too. And we call them the Goofy Olympics because the vibes are goofy and silly and, like, it doesn't matter. We're just doing this because our Fed is asking us to do it. And
it happens at the very end of the season. Everyone's vibing.
It's like the last class of the year when you watch a movie.
Yep.
It's very that. So the team event happens at the Olympics. And it's like, why does this happen if this is not a real part of the sport usually? And it's actually, I think it's a good idea because its intention is to make sure that a country, also known as like a federation, has a well-rounded skating team, mm-hmm. because if you put all your money into like your single skaters and then you have no competitive ice dancers or pairs, like you're not going to be able to compete in the team event, even if your man and your woman won gold, you know? So it's just like, it's a good way of making sure that countries are being fair about the disciplines that they distribute their like time and energy into and money. Okay. So I just wanted to explain really quick how it's scored, mm-hmm. and like how it functions, because the scoring is a little different and it's like supposed to be simpler, but I think by being different it is just inherently more complicated because it's a whole nother thing we have to learn now. But
yep.
Okay, so the top 10 countries or federations, I'll say feds from now on, and that means countries, federations. You might have something like Russia where they're not allowed to compete under the country, so they're like the athletes of Russia committee or something.
They're the Russian Olympic committee.
And, the Russian Olympic committee.
If just real quick, this is an aside. The Russian Olympic Committee is the Russian Olympic Committee because they've been penalized for just doping and a bunch of weird shit all across sports, not just in figure skating. So they still get to go to the Olympics and they still get to compete and they're still gonna get to win a bunch of shit. Their punishment is they can't fly their flag, and if any of them win, the anthem doesn't get played. That's it.
I think it's also like the total doesn't get added to the historical total, but like, yeah, those are all kind of well, and it's like the historical totals are fucked anyway, because if you think about like West Germany versus East Germany and now it's just Germany, like how do you square that? So whatever.
Yeah,
it's
there's
like
a countries very, that no yeah. longer exist. Yeah.
There's new countries. Yeah. So, okay. Who gets to compete in the team event? Not every Fed gets to compete. That would be crazy. It's the top 10 federations. So basically, if every country took the top scores of their top athletes and added them all up, those top total scores, top 10, gets to send a team to the team event. Okay. And you're only awarded points based on how you rank. So they use the judging system we just explained while it's happening in order to determine the, like, order of how the skaters placed first through 10th. And then they throw those numbers away. And then all you have is your ranking. And you are awarded a point value that is like inverse to your placement. So if you placed first, you get 10 points. And if you place second, you get 9 points all the way down the line. And those are the points. And so because there's four disciplines and two programs per discipline, the total amount of points a team can get is 80. And last time this happened was the last Olympics, Canada won the team event with like 72 points. And so it's like you want to get an amount close to 80. That's kind of it. Basically, like the way it works is like every country puts a man, a woman, and a pair team. So like a duo, a pair, and an ice dance couple out. Okay. And then after the short program, they can switch 2 out of 4 of those disciplines out if they think that it's going to help their odds or somebody's tired or whatever. You can't switch everyone out. You can only switch like half of your disciplines. It's not half of your people because some have 2 and some have 1. It's confusing. But anyway, and then everyone at the end, whoever team gets closest to 80, they get a gold medal and everyone on the team gets a gold medal. And so it's kind of nice because you end up with skaters who have a gold medal that like never would have earned it on their own, which is like, I don't mean to say that like a mean way, but it's true. They earned it in this way, you know, by
yeah,
being
and it's still
a strong member of a strong team.
Yeah. Wow. This was actually very helpful to me. I'm sorry I was quiet, but I was internalizing all of the team event things.
So at this point, we've explained a lot of the scoring and we kind of have like a random like what are these things going on with this sport? What am I looking at kind of section?
Yes.
If we want to just close out with that, which is a little less mathy and a little more fun.
Yes. So first thing, people have to skate in an order. And at the Olympics, the order people get put into groups to skate their programs is for the short program based on their current international standing, which is more math. It's comprised of like the past three seasons or so, and it's a bunch of points that get added together. And sometimes people will be, it's not always like the best person is first or something. Sometimes one skater will have already done all of their events for the year, so they already have all of their points, and then someone doesn't. So it's kind of a fluctuating thing, but that's basically how short program starting orders are determined, is current international world standings, and it goes from top to bottom. So the last group would be the people who are currently like highest ranked in the world.
Right, I guess that's bottom to top. No, is that top to bottom? No, I can't think anymore. My brain's rotting out of my head. But yeah, basically the best people go at the end is the idea. And I think, I wonder why that is. Because part of me thinks it's for broadcasting reasons, but that can't be entirely true.
It might be, though. I don't know. That's a good, if anyone is a skating historian, please let us know, because I don't know. And I'm curious.
So, like, last couple groups are usually, like, the stars. And sometimes they won't broadcast the first few groups, which sucks.
Also, sometimes commentators will be garbage about it. And they're like, well, there you have it. This is the current standings after the first three groups. And now it's getting good. And it's like, sir, it might be true, but you shouldn't say it.
Yeah, it's subjective. Why do you watch the sport? Do you watch it to see just the people who are the best? Or do you watch it to see people who, I mean, let's face it, they're all probably better than you. Maybe not. Maybe you're amazing, but, you know.
I mean, unless you're literally fucking like Patrick Chan and you're sitting down to watch the 2022 Olympics, I don't want to hear your opinion about who you think is good and who I think you think is bad in like a dismissive way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about it in a fun fan way, because that's like what being a fan is.
Oh, for sure. But, yeah, you know what I mean. What else? Talk to me about Zamboni ballets.
Okay, so a Zamboni, as you probably know just from existing, but maybe not, if you live in a very warm climate or something, is a very silly word. And it means it's a big, like, vehicle machine thing that resurfaces the ice by covering it in, like, hot water, essentially. And I think it melts down the top layer of the ice and leaves a smooth layer. So it's called resurfacing. You might hear somebody call it the ice cut. It's usually, like, a break in between groups. It's very nice if you're a spectator because you have time to make yourself a snack or take a little nap. And basically, it happens between warm-up groups. And it happens because if you've ever been to like a public ice rink, you know that it's easier to skate on a very smooth, clean ice than it is to skate after peewee hockey practice when they've torn the entire ice thing up. It's just like a smooth surface is better than a choppy, fucked up surface. And after a couple warm-up groups, the ice is in worse condition than it started in. And if we never resurfaced it, then it would just be like progressively harder and less fair until the last person, the best person, is now skating with a significant handicap compared to the first people, which, even if they're the best in the world, is not really fair. So usually, like, every two or three groups, the Zambonis will come out. And we call it the Zamboni Ballet because a lot of times I'll play some nice soothing music and it's just like watching some cars do beautiful, entrancing...
Just circles.
Circles, yeah.
Also, sometimes at big events, you will also see just a bunch of nice little people who like waddle out with their little buckets, and they kind of walk around and they check things. What they're doing is filling up the biggest holes left in the ice with some snow before the Zamboni like smooths things over. And that needs to be done because for toe jumps, which you know from part one, the more speed and power skaters use to go into their toe jumps, and in the case of like elite athletes, that's a lot of speed and power, the more they break off chunks of the ice on their takeoffs. So there end up being like little like holes and grooves and stuff, which if you get your blade caught in one of those, you could be literally one of the best skaters in the world and you will fall, because it's like getting caught on like something in the ground that you didn't see.
And it could be dangerous too.
Yeah. You won't see that on like, if you watch your public ice resurface, usually they're not going to do it unless there is a literal massive hole in the ice rink. But for the Olympics, they're going to have little people with little buckets.
Yep. All right, Netta, can you tell me what a kiss and cry is? It sounds salacious, like a soap opera.
It's what I do on a Friday night.
Ooh.
It's also the kiss and cry is the little booth or section of the arena where the skater and their team or whoever is there to support them, like their coach, or sometimes it's people's choreographers. Jason Brown recently had his sports psychologist there. Just it's the little room where they wait for the scores to be heard. And it's called the kiss and cry because that's where people kiss and cry, because it's an emotional little space. It's where you sit and reflect on what you've just done and you wait for your scores. And sometimes people have very iconic moments there. They will either be very upset or very proud. Something that's very common is people will give shout outs because there is a microphone usually somewhere in there. So that's where you would hear people like start listing off like, hi, mom, hi, dad, hi, whomstever. So it's kind of a cute little... Yeah, it's their little Oscar speech moment. And it's honestly one of my favorite parts of the sport because when it's joyful, it's a fucking delight. Like getting to see someone get a score that they probably weren't expecting or is like a very, very good score. And like reacting to that is one of my favorite parts of watching this sport.
Hell yeah. I have to say, I don't know if I've ever seen kissing, but maybe it's because we don't really watch Pairs and Ice Dance, because sometimes those people are like couples and then maybe they'll kiss.
I don't know. I think we should all be kissing. Well, not right now because everyone has to wear masks in the kiss and cry, but maybe one day more kissing in the kiss and cry.
Yeah, but maybe not like coach to student because that's a power dynamic.
Coach on coach?
Yeah, like just bring another coach in. Bring someone from the audience. I don't know.
What if the coach is just allowed to bring their partner so they have someone to kiss at the kiss and cry?
It's like New Year's Eve. Like you just bring your significant other just so you can kiss at the specified time.
It's like a mistletoe situation. Like you have to kiss. You're at the kiss and cry. You get a plus one so you can kiss them at the kiss and cry.
You have to do one or the other. And if you don't, we just wait. The next person can't go until you do one of them.
Conversely, also like New Year's Eve, you're either kissing or you're crying.
There you go. There you have
it. Let's move on.
So we're going to talk about something that is very dear to us on this show, and that is plushies. By plushies, we mean stuffed animals and sometimes like stuffed objects or flowers or candy. There are things that are thrown out onto the ice for the skaters after they are done as a show of appreciation from the audience that they did a good job. They get little prezzies, little presents. Now, disclaimer, I actually don't know if this is going to happen at the Olympics because during these COVID times, a lot of events have been like, you can't just like throw objects at people because it's not sanitary to do that. So you might not see it, which would be really sad, but we like to rank and discuss the plushies in a segment we call Plushie Corner on every episode because we think it's an important part of the sport and we like to talk about cute things.
Yeah, like I told my nail tech, we are sports journalists. This is serious sports journalism. Also, it's important to mention that a part of why plushies are so important right now in the culture of figure skating is that a lot of the top billing athletes have like their own thing. Most famously, Yuzuru Hanyu is the king of Winnie the Pooh. It's like his whole deal. And if you Google pictures from the past Olympics, you can see just like the shower of Winnie the Pooh plushies like covering the ice. And it takes the little children volunteers like a literal 5 to 10 minutes to clear them out. And it's like a whole thing. It's like, yeah. It's the figure skating equivalent of like going to a rock concert and like throwing your bra at the stage, except it's plushies.
Yeah, slash also like going to a K-pop concert and having like that band's light stick. It's like, yeah, it's like a signature thing. Unfortunately, in the case of Yuzu, it's called the Reign of Poos. Like that's what it's called. And I wish to speak with whoever named it that because I feel like I have some notes.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, you also might see them holding a tissue case that's a stuffed animal. And that's also just like a thing in skating. Like if you ever watched Yuri on Ice, like it's
like
it's,
your
I don't know.
Talisman, your like little good luck charm situation.
Yeah.
What's left? Costumes.
Yeah, I think a common question that people have is like, what are the rules on costumes? Because they like, is that girl allowed to wear pants? Is that boy allowed to show titty? Like, I don't know. What are the rules?
Well, there is not a lot of rules. There's one of the rules is that there is a certain percentage of your body that needs to be covered up. And I don't actually know what the percentage is, but it's just like basically you can't skate in a swimsuit, more or less, which is kind of questionable and subjective. I can think of several dresses that are like gorgeous nude illusions with just like rhinestones on them. And that's fine. But I don't know. There's a lot of inventive cutouts and things that designers do to kind of work around this. Also, you have to be wearing a costume. You can't just show up in your like rehearsal blacks.
You will get a costume violation deduction if any part of your costume hits the ice, and that includes like a hair elastic or a single Swarovski stone or a sequin. Everything has to be on super, super, super tight. It's funny because generally in women's, it's not a problem, but in men's, for a long time, there was this culture of you had to have really short hair, and infamously, Jason Brown was really pressured to cut his ponytail off because it was not considered appropriate and masculine. Now we're finally, which I think is fantastic, moving towards a space where the male skaters can express themselves a little more freely and have longer hair, but they're not as used to tying it up as the female skaters are. And so some of them have these precarious little ponytails, and you spend the whole time being like, is it going to fall out? Are they going to get a deduction? But girls are allowed to wear pants.
Yeah, and girls can wear pants. Jumpsuits have been huge the past couple of years and are real cool. Another thing is you can't have props.
Oh my God, thank God.
Yeah, I, as an adult figure skater in my competitions, people are allowed to have props, and it's garbage because people get higher PCS literally for just like waving a thing around, and everyone does it and it's really annoying. So it's great that they can't do that. They do that for the gala, which is just like the little show they have, which is not graded and is fun.
So yeah, also you'll see like most of the women skate with white skates or maybe like beige skates, and men will skate with black skates. And that's not a rule either. It's a very entrenched tradition in figure skating, but you wouldn't be penalized if you broke that rule.
Yeah, girls wear white skates mostly. It started as like a tribute, and because it was like a trend set in the 30s, actually. It goes all the way back because the three-time Olympic champion of the late 20s, early 30s, Sonja Henie, who is from, I want to say Norway. I think she's from Norway. She was one of the first people to wear like the white skates. And after that, girls all wanted to emulate her. And then it just became this thing. So it's like a tradition which is almost 100 years old. And I think it's, I mean, gendering shoes is stupid, but I think it's a very cool tradition. I think it's cool that it's been 100 years almost, and people are still like, whether consciously or subconsciously, honoring this woman with their white skates.
Yeah. The last thing we want to talk about before we finish up part two is, what the fuck is a war horse? You might hear people talking about this, especially if you are in Twitter or Reddit or like any of the like fan spaces. It's just one of those words that is so common in our like vocabulary of figure skating fandom.
Well, first of all, War Horse is a very good play in a mediocre movie about a horse. But in the world of figure skating, a war horse is a piece of music that is overused and people do it a lot, and it's something that you know is a surefire way maybe for the judges to like what you're doing. I've explained it to friends in the past as like, if you go to like the voice auditions and you sing "This Girl Is on Fire," it's like, it's a hard piece of music, and if you belt it a lot, people are gonna be like, Niam, she sure is doing some singing.
Yeah, it's true. Although I was always advised for auditions to never sing like the most obvious shit, like on my own or something. And that doesn't seem to detract at all from skaters. Like nobody's ever like, oh, another Carmen. The judges love it. It's interesting because for a long time, music with lyrics was not allowed. And at some point in the past 10 years, I believe, it became allowed. And now there's this whole new diversity in like what are the musical selections being used. And while that is technically very much allowed, you do have these judges that are like old school and maybe still prefer like a Black Swan or like a Carmen. And war horses don't have to be that sort of like classical music either. Like they also are kind of
you
trends.
Can leave a light on.
Yeah, like weird random songs that like just become really popular in skating. Or a lot of times if a movie musical comes out, that is the only fucking thing you're gonna hear for like a year. La La Land, Greatest Showman, It's like if anybody sings in a movie, that's everyone's going to skate to it.
Yeah, Star is Born.
Oh my God, yeah.
But basically, I mean, it's war horses can get annoying, but there is also a thing of like sometimes a piece of music becomes a war horse because someone has a very iconic performance to it. And then obviously other skaters want to like pay tribute to that. So it's again this thing of like, again, but sometimes it's people will be very open about like, yeah, so this other person do this 10 years ago and I've always wanted to skate to this piece of music. There's also a thing of like, quote unquote, like growing up to be able to do one of them. Like,
it's like a rite of passage.
Sometimes you like earn like one of those big pieces of music, and I think it can be fun. Also, I can literally never say no to a Carmen. It's just my toxic trait, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the last thing I would say about war horses is that if you can do a piece of music and really pull it off to the point where everyone's like, this is the definitive one, nothing that came before this comes close and no one should ever try ever again, that's like the ultimate flex. Like,
you've
I'm thinking
it.
Like Jason Brown, Schindler's List, for example.
Yes.
Which you'll see at the Olympics.
Yes.
You know, Schindler's List is a really popular piece of music. You probably saw Yulia Lipnitskaya do it a few Olympics ago. She was like the little girl in the red coat. It's a very popular piece of music because it's beautiful and also because it's really evocative. And so it's automatically making you feel emotions. And so you're more likely to be like, this is art. I'm going to give this a good score. Jason Brown is like an actual Jewish man who is out there doing it. You'll see. I won't spoil it for you, but it's just, it's breathtaking. It's like the equivalent of if you're playing Hamlet. It's like a bajillion other people have played Hamlet, but if you play Hamlet really well and everyone's like, you are the best Hamlet that has ever Hamleted, that's a flex.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. God, we can't start talking about Jason. Save that for part three of this because I have so much to say. But yeah, there's something to doing such a good job with a piece of music that people want to emulate you and pay tribute to you by skating to the same music. And then there's something to, like you said, being the last one, because no one's gonna attempt this after you, because why would they bother?
Or they might, and everybody will be critical of them. But
yeah,
anyway,
that also sucks.
That also sucks. But we're like, we're on a positive note, and then these people suck. The last thing is that we repeatedly in this episode said like, oh, this is really mathy and we're not going to get into it. If you really do want to get into it, there are some amazing resources, and I would recommend sort of the holy trinity to anybody getting into figure skating.
Yes.
And that would be Jackie Wong, Skating Scores, and So You Want to Watch Figure Skating. Explain Jackie Wong to me. Briefly.
Jackie Wong is a legend, icon, and star, and figure skating will forever be better than it used to be because he's on the internet. Jackie is a skating analyst and a cool, good, smart person who understands things that the rest of us don't. He does predictions for each event, and by predictions I don't mean he like contemplates his orb. He sits down and he does the math and he tells you what is most likely to happen in a very nice, I think his Twitter bio says he provides level-headed analysis, and I always appreciate that from him.
It's because super true.
Whereas the rest of us get super fired up and personal, he will just spit the facts, which is also why when he gets worked up, you know it's serious. So you can follow him at Rocker Skating on Twitter, and he also has his own website, which is also rockerskating.com. And he will be at the Olympics, and he will be covering all of it. And he is your probably most valuable resource. Wow, this is a love letter now.
Yeah, but like, I'm not going to say everyone likes Jackie because nobody likes everybody, but he's one of the most universally like respected and looked to figures in the sport for like, this is the source. And in a world where like, it's so hard to get that kind of reliability from any news source, like this is where you want to be looking for figure skating.
Yes. Our friends at Skating Scores, we already shouted out, they will just blow your mind with the way they approach understanding the hard parts of this sport. And also for like someone like me, who my brain sees numbers and it stops working, just having their visuals is always so fucking helpful. And again, I don't remember how I used to consume this sport without this resource.
It's true. So they are at Skating Scores on Twitter. The final piece in the Holy Trinity is So You Want to Watch Figure Skating, which is actually a Tumblr, I think, but it's a very complex Tumblr to the point where it's just kind of a website hosted by Tumblr. But it's
actually a .com. It's just hosted on Tumblr. Tumblr.
Right. Okay, so there you go. But it's SYWTWFS.
That's their Twitter handle. Their website is just So You Want.
It's SoYouWantToWatchFS.com.
So their website is SoYouWantToWatchFS.com. And they are your resource for just where the fuck do I start? They will have an overview of every event. They will kind of list who is important or like the people to watch at every event. They compile streaming info and help you figure out how to watch the events in your country, wherever that might be.
They have a calendar.
They have a calendar. I'm subscribed to their calendar and it goes straight to my Google Calendar. And it's saved my life because it automatically changes time zones. So you can always figure out when you have to wake up to watch the figure skating. And again, just absolutely invaluable resource doing the Lord's work.
There you go. So that is that on the sport and the judging system. And next episode in the final part of our three-part series, we're going to talk about sort of the storylines and the cast of characters, which is our favorite part of this sport, the skaters, the journeys, you know, the agony of defeat and the bloobity blah 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 of winning.
Yes, precisely. So we're going to do that very quick and stay tuned. And we are very, very, very excited. Before we go, we do want to let you know that we have a Patreon and a Buy Me a Coffee, which are ways you can support us and tip us and help us continue to make this possible for you and for ourselves. Our Patreon is patreon.com/iceteapod. You get a lot of bonus content and fun things over there, and you get to help us keep the lights on in the metaphorical studio and in a hotel room in Germany, apparently, because that's happening. And our Buy Me a Coffee, where you can just give us a one-time tip, is buymeacoff.ee/iceteapod. Megan, do you want to tell me a list of just fantastic people who are making this dream work for us already, and our new friends can join their ranks?
Okay, so if you want to join the ranks of Jimmy, Natalie, Robert, Kate, Skating Scores, Vox Machina, Adela, Greta, Tryhard Radio, Samantha, Jesse, Kieran, Mary, Yana, Barbara, a whole nother Barbara. Yeah, that's right. We got two Barbaras. Sunny, Aura, Sally, Samira, Joseph, KM, In Spirit I'm Always Throwing Plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan, then head on over to patreon.com/iceteapod.
Amazing. What else? We are on the internet. You can follow along on our Olympic adventure. You can say thanks for helping you sound very smart and cool in front of your nail tech. Megan, where can people find you if they wanted to tell you nice things?
I am on Twitter at MeganKelleher3. That is MeganKelleher3. What about you, Netta?
I'm at Netta Marie. That's NEDA and then just Marie on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find both of us over at IceteaPod on Twitter and maybe reviving Instagram real soon for the Olympics. So find us there and we'll see you on the other side of this, where we talk about the cast of characters.
Hell yes. All right.
Love you.
See you next time. Love you.